You're listening to Intentionally Catholic, a podcast about living our Catholic faith with joy and intention.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm Dan Hansen, and as always, I'm joined by Father Ron Hutchinson. And last week, we started taking a deeper dive into evangelization, and we talked about a few things that we as Catholics possess, aspects of the faith that are beautiful, important, and of course, true. You know, we possess so much, and the world needs it. And Jesus gave us a command to go throughout the world preaching the gospel, spreading the message, talking about our faith, evangelizing. Now, how are you doing at that? How am I doing at that? And maybe more importantly, why are we, or why are so many Catholics in general, not embracing this great commission from our Lord? Now, today, let's talk about five reasons why I think evangelization is a struggle for all of us. And in discussing these obstacles, let's hopefully find a pathway through them or around them. Now, I started with a rhetorical question just a little bit ago. How are you doing at evangelizing? How am I doing at evangelizing? And when I think about that question, my first impulse is to answer it in the negative. I'm not great at evangelizing. I don't feel comfortable doing it. I struggle. But then I started thinking a little more deeply about it, and I realized I evangelize all the time. For example, I have shared this story over and over throughout this last week. I purchased some software online from a music place, sweetwater.com. I do guitar. And I've started recording, you know, music and stuff just for fun. Mm-hmm. And so I'm gathering all these little tools that I need and just having a lot of fun. And I bought this little package, this little software package that would help me. And on the website, it said, this is non-refundable. It's digital download stuff. You can't send it back. That's fine. I knew I wanted it, so I bought it. And then I spent about a half an hour trying to figure out how to make it work. I couldn't find it in the software that I was using. In the meantime, I had gotten an email from the company saying, you know, already they sent me, like within 10 minutes, they'd sent me an email saying, thank you for your purchase. You know, sadly, it's unrefundable. But, you know, if you have any questions, reach out to me. And it was a guy, Steven, you know, here's my number. It was a $30 piece of software. I couldn't believe that they sent me an email for that. Anyway, I couldn't figure this thing out. And I spent a bunch of time online and I realized finally, I bought something that needed a bigger piece of software to make this work. So I needed to plug this little thing in, and I didn't want to spend another $180 just to make my little $30 thing work. So I realized, the money's out the window. Then I thought, I got this email from this Steven guy. You know, he seems nice. Sent me an email. I'm going to reach out to him, and I'll just own my stupidity, and I'll just ask him if there's any way they can make an exception. I know there's no refunds, but hey, what do you think? Is there any way? I'm cool either way. So I send him that email. And he gets back to me right away. You know what? I'll make an exception. He wasn't selling me something extra. He didn't give me store credit. He just simply said, I'll take you at face value that you uninstalled the stuff off your computer, and I'm going to give you a refund. Well, I was so impressed by that. He didn't fight with me, didn't argue with me, just gave me my money back. And that's it. Walked away. So then I felt obligated. You know, oh, man, I buy something else from this guy. I don't know. So I started to ask him about some guitars that I was looking at, just, you know, maybe some feedback. He calls me and we have a conversation. Long story short, I bought a guitar from the guy. Now, the reason I bring that up is because I have told that story to everybody that I think is, you know, possibly interested in customer service stuff. I work in customer service industry stuff. So that story matters. I mean, how that person handled mm-hmm. me really made a big difference. So I have talked about that over and over again. I have talked about that to anybody who's buying music stuff online. Sweetwater.com, that's the place to go. Service, the refund. I mean, just everything about that experience was great. I'm evangelizing because of this relationship that the guy built with me and what he did for me. He gave me $30 back without a fight. And yet, when I think about it, I struggle to talk about Jesus to other people, and Jesus died to save me from my sins. All the things that Jesus has done for me, I find myself, hesitant. When the Sweetwater thing comes up, I'll talk about it left and right. Well, I know I'm not alone in this. And so today, Father, we're going to go over five reasons that I think, you know, five reasons why I think we don't evangelize more as Catholics, maybe as Christians in general. Specifically, it's going to focus on Catholics. And normally, it's you who've got the list, and I respond. This time, we're going to flip it on its head. I've got a list, and you can tell me when you disagree. You know, okay. By all means, I'll only weep a little bit. but I'm going to run you through the points. You just tell me what you think. So why don't we evangelize more as Catholics, or, you know, people in general, but let's keep it Catholics. I think one of them is a lack of a personal relationship with Christ, or the lack of a vibrant relationship with Christ. You know, Pope Benedict XVI wrote, being a Christian is not the result of an ethical choice or a lofty idea, but the encounter with an event, a person, which gives life a new horizon and a decisive direction. Jesus is a person. We encounter him in the sacraments, in the Eucharist, in reconciliation, in all these places. And I don't know that that's not a problem. That's a great thing. But I do think it's possible to sometimes get lost in the fact that I'm encountering, you know, it's a thing I'm doing. And I sometimes forget that it's a person I'm meeting. And I think when we've got that relationship, when we realize that relationship, when we're living into that relationship with Jesus, when we realize what he's done for us, you know, I realized the Sweetwater guy saved me $30. It was front and center on my mind. And what's $30 compared to eternity? Look what Jesus has done for me. Somehow I've got to get that more front and center in my life. But I think that's one of the reasons. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that one. I think in order to want to share, you have to have some significant relationship or some significant event in that relationship that changes it, that makes it like, oh, I've got to share this. I have to let people know. And I think one of the problems that begins to happen is because things are happening in our lives and going well and life is good and blah, blah, blah. When life is good, by the way, we don't ever think about God or Jesus as like why it's going good, why my life is on the keel. It's on even keel. It's really going well. And so we just go about our life. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then when something bad happens, we go, oh, you know, we gotta go to Jesus. Well, it's like, but you didn't care to recognize him with all the things that were going on in the other days.
Sure.
You know, so I think that you're right. It isn't a personal relationship that we are constantly gaining, see what we're gaining from it, and that we're giving to it.
Well, that's the other side of it. Yeah, giving
to
it. So
that's the other. So it's both, you know, gaining from it, but giving to it. And so if I am not so connected with Jesus that it's like, wow, how could I not want to talk about this relationship? It's more important to me than all the other relationships I have in my life. But I don't think with most people that is really the case. I think that those are the saintly people that we encounter now and then. And we go, wow, that person is just, wow, they're on fire. Well, they're on fire because they have a very significant personal relationship with Jesus Christ, where they give and they acknowledge what they gain.
Right. Now, I'm reading a book right now. Oh, man, I can't remember it. That's really embarrassing. I can look it up. Anyway, I'm reading a book right now, and as I'm scurrying to look it up, Consoling the Heart of Jesus. It's a great book, and the idea is that, you know, part of the idea is that Jesus is a person. I mean, that shouldn't be groundbreaking. It shouldn't be earth-shattering. Jesus was a person. He was fully human, fully divine. But being a person, he still has those needs for that relationship, for being consoled. His heart aches for us. Think about the times, you know, where, you know, I can think about the times where, you know, you do whatever you can for the kids, you know, you just really laid it all on the line and they don't even notice it. They didn't notice. They didn't care. It just, you know, they just moved right on to the next thing. And it does hurt a little bit. And when you think about what Jesus did for us, it's not just what he's giving to us. That's what you're talking about. It's realizing what we give back. And I think that's where the relationship really starts to deepen and grow, is just spending time thinking about what I can give back and how I can console his heart.
Plain and simple, no relationship grows without give and take. Give and take. And I think it's funny that we would never keep our friends if we treated them the way that sometimes we treat Jesus in being in relationship with him.
No kidding.
But we would never keep other friends. They would never stick with us.
No, I think that's really good. And I think that's something to dig into on a future episode. So lack of a personal relationship with Christ or the lack of a really deep, vibrant relationship with Christ is one of the things that slows us down, stops us from evangelizing. Here's another one. I don't know enough. I'm not smart enough about the faith. And I read a great article by Father Dwight Longenecker, 10 Reasons Why Catholics Don't Evangelize. And he points out that in one of his points, a lot of people mistakenly believe that evangelization is first and foremost about getting people to join the Catholic Church. Instead, it's really about letting God work through us to bring Jesus to others. You know, that's the first thing we're trying to do. And as such, you know, he's making the argument that we should meet people where they are. You know, maybe it's just a conversation, listening to where someone is. I think you and I have talked about this. It's loving people in the moment that they're in and being willing and able to share how the Lord has helped us. And over the time, over time, those conversations can become about Catholicism and leading people to the church. But sometimes we don't need to know all this information. We don't need to be these great biblical scholars or great theologians or great apologists for the church to be able to reach out and meet people where they're at, right?
No, I agree with you entirely. I think that too often we think that evangelizing is about facts and data, okay? It really is about our relationship with Jesus Christ that has changed our lives. Okay. And so it's not about church history and church dogma and church doctrine and, you know, all that. It's really about like, this is what it means to me. Okay. So, yeah, where we're going to encounter people is where they're at. Then we could probably say, you know, this is how I've dealt with a similar situation. This is why my faith is important to me in these situations. You know, there's lots of, you know, it's hard to talk about esoteric things, you know, without a specific. But I think we forget we're just talking about us, what we believe, why it's important, and why we would want to share that with others.
And I think it's so important to, you know, not necessarily, to the exclusion of saying all of those things. I think saying all of that stuff about what Jesus has done for us, what the Lord has done for us, that's absolutely key and it can't be left out. It's not replaced by just loving and being kind. It's a both and, but it's definitely a both and. I've got to be a kind, loving person. And that's what's going to give me the freedom and the opportunity to speak and to be heard. If I start
we don't start right away by saying, oh, let me tell you about Jesus. You know, I mean, no, we start by saying like, you know, hey, tell me about yourself, you know?
Yeah. So, okay, that's my second one. My third reason we don't evangelize, I don't want to force my religion onto anyone. You know, I think that's pretty common. I think we don't want to think about us as going and just ramming something down somebody else's throat. So we just, we'll back away. Everybody's going to think what they're going to think. I'm going to let them do that. But really, we shouldn't think about evangelization as forcing. We're really proposing. That's what evangelization is. You know, when I talk about that Sweetwater experience, every time I bring that up, I don't think I am grabbing you by the ears and dragging you to the computer and making you type in sweetwater.com and buy stuff. I don't think that at all. I just know that I'm sharing with you an experience that I think is a great experience. And if you're interested in that kind of thing, this might be a place to look. I'm just proposing something. I'm not forcing anybody on, you know, anything on anybody. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, it's interesting to me why we get so wigged out. We treat it like we're forcing someone to talk about something that we think is valuable. Mm-hmm. Like you talk about the Sweetwater experience. That's the example you've been using. It's because you thought it was super valuable. Mm-hmm. You were like blown away by the value of that experience. Are we not blown away enough by the value of the experience of our faith lives?
Right.
That we would be, we could not be quiet. I mean, I always go back to Peter and James and John and all those early apostles. They could not contain themselves with what they possessed.
Yeah.
You know, you can't contain yourself talking about Sweetwater. We should be that on fire about our relationship with Jesus Christ. And it's funny that I don't know why we think of that as forcing something on somebody. Hey, just like when I give a recommendation for a restaurant and say what a great experience I had and how fabulous it was, and I can go on and on for hours about the food there. You know what? I don't think that I'm saying to people, you have to go. You have to do this. But I am saying that was something that just that changed my life, that meal.
And I
want you to know how much it changed my life, you know. So, yeah, but why wouldn't I want to do that with faith? You know, I just think it's funny how we become like super concerned about how people are going to react about that. But we're not concerned about other things that we would share readily, you know. Even negative things that we share readily.
Right.
You know, we'll share that, you know, I think, you know, Jeep Wranglers are a piece of junk. I had somebody say that to me the other day after I bought one. I'm like, wow, you know, I'm sorry you don't like Jeep Wranglers, you know. You know, they're not all blown up on the side of the road like you think, yeah. You know, but okay, thanks for sharing. But it's like, you know, I wondered what that person was expecting me to do, you know, like,
sell it.
I'm not going to go back and I'm not going to get rid of it. You know, lemon law, you know, no, I mean, so it's just funny. We share a lot of stuff all the time without any thought for how somebody's going to take it. But with faith, we just get freaked out.
Well, for me, you know, I was just thinking about it as you're talking, you know, when I talk about Sweetwater, I am not expecting if you go there or don't go there. It's not really impacting me a ton. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just happy to share the experience. Like the same thing with your restaurant, maybe with our religion, maybe we need to be less focused on coordinating an outcome. You know, maybe that's where some of the strain and stress comes from. You know, maybe that's why we think we're forcing, because we're approaching the conversation from the idea that I need to convert this person. And that's God's work.
How about if I just, it is God's work.
Let's just share.
Let's remember that.
Make a choice.
Yeah. All our job is to share why it's important to us. Just like that good meal, or just like Sweetwater. After that, it's in God's hands.
And it becomes a lot easier to share at that point when we're not thinking mm-hmm. about ourselves as forcing anything. We're just throwing the idea out there because
what I think is important.
Exactly. All right. So number four, it's the priest's job to evangelize, right? I think this is one that comes up. And in a recent apostolic exhortation, Pope Francis writes, in virtue of their baptism, all members of the people of God have become missionary disciples. All of the baptized, whatever their position in the church or their level of instruction in the faith, are agents of evangelization. And it would be insufficient to envisage a plan of evangelization to be carried out by professionals while the rest of us faithful would simply be passive recipients. So you're going to have to disagree with the Pope
better.
On that one if you're going to disagree with
me. I don't disagree with the Pope on that one. He is entirely correct. It's probably one of the things I say most frequently is that I'm frustrated by the fact that many people think it is my job entirely to do what really, quite honestly, they're better equipped to do. And you say better equipped, Father, and I'm going to say yes. And you know why? Because I don't work out in the marketplace. I don't spend most of my life out in that world out there that you all are constantly engaging with. Okay. It doesn't mean that I don't eat at restaurants. It doesn't mean I don't go shopping at stores, but I don't have as many contacts with people in their normal life, you know, mm-hmm. sitting at sports games, et cetera, et cetera. You know, my life is not built around my kids and my life and work. I mean, my work's here on campus, on the campus of the parish, you know. So who do you think I'm encountering? Well, the people that have already been, you know, they've already bought the goods, you know, so to speak, for the most part. So, yeah, it is really everyone else's responsibility far more than it is mine.
No.
Now, I think it's my responsibility to help encourage the laity to this task. And that means, you know, giving them, you know, attaboys and, you know, and encouragement by giving them information and assistance, etc. But really, yeah, there's going to be more opportunities in your life, Dan Hansen, than in my life to evangelize.
Well, I think whenever you talk to people too, I mean, if you show up with a collar on, I mean, they're already listening to you through a filter of some sort. You know, they know where you're coming from, or they assume where you're coming from. Their defenses are up. You name it.
Yeah.
Something happens. When it's just us working, I'm working, you know, with my coworkers, you know, I've built relationships and I've got an in that is already established that it would take you a long time to get as a priest.
I don't expect that me coming into any situation with this Roman collar on doesn't mean that there's going to be a certain number of roadblocks right away. Okay. I expect roadblocks. Okay. I expect this to be a stumbling block, this thing around my neck, you know? I just think that I can't go anywhere in some sense without being a tool of evangelization, meaning just by wearing the collar.
Sure.
Okay. But I also know that I'm not going to be listened to in the exact same way that you could be listened to by your family members, by your coworkers, you know, by just the average person you're going to encounter than when I walk in and, you know, it's kind of crazy. It's one of the reasons that sometimes, and I don't, if I am like in a, this happened last night. I'll give you this situation. Last night, I went out to dinner. I went to a local establishment for dinner. The place had a bar. So I sat at the bar for dinner because when you're one person, it's just easiest to sit at the bar. Okay. So I got dinner and I had a drink with dinner and I was sitting there and the guy had, when I first came in, had introduced himself and I shook his hand, the bartender, and said, he said, "What's your name?" And I said, "Ron." And so then after he's getting ready to leave, because a couple had bought a drink for me.
Okay.
Because they knew me.
Sure.
And knew I was a priest and, you know, it was a way of saying, "Hey, Father," you know, and they stopped by and talked to me. He jokingly said, "Well, it must be nice to know people and, you know, that buy you drinks." Yeah. So that doesn't happen all the time. You know, it doesn't happen as often as you'd think it does. And he said, "But that was really nice." 'Cause they were like, and they referred to you as Father. "Could you get Father a drink? You know, we'll pay for Father's drink." Well, I hadn't said I was Father. I had just said I was Ron. He said, "So your name again?" And I said, it's Ron. It's Father Ron. I said, I'm the priest at the Basilica. And he goes, "Oh, well, that's cool." You know, but I think in some sense, the reason why then after that we could have a conversation is because I hadn't started with the first thing.
No,
that I'm Father. You know,
you started as Ron.
I didn't have my collar on. I just had a shirt on. You know, I just wanted to be incognito. And funny, the couple, "This beard is really making it impossible for me to be incognito."
Yeah, you can't
hide.
They
said, "Father, it isn't the beard. It's that cool mustache."
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever's going on, we can pick you out of a crowd no matter what.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not just the priest's job, even though we tell ourselves that. That's where people will get evangelized, you know, just the people who do important stuff at church. It's for all of us. And back to that quote from Pope Francis, one part that I really liked: all of the baptized, whatever their position in the church or their level of instruction in the faith, are agents of evangelization. So it's for all of us to start reaching out and talking to people. All right. Last point that I've got, complication or obstacle that I wrote down. There's a lot of other ones. How about this one? Almost everybody goes to heaven anyway, so why bother? Now, to me, this is one of the biggest reasons that we don't evangelize, and I ran into this a ton as I was working my way, researching my way, talking my way into the Catholic Church. There's a universalist idea out there that pretty much everybody goes to heaven. And with that going on, how in the world do you even begin to reach out, and what's the point?
First off, I am stunned by that thought.
Okay, so that's new to you. That's not something you've encountered.
Yeah, I have never heard that before. I mean, I've heard people say, you know, that they think that everybody goes to heaven. And I'm always like, really? Where do you get that from? Because even Jesus talked about separating the sheep and the goats. So I don't believe that it's going to be like, you know, it's just like, ah, come on in, everybody. You know, God's so loving and so merciful and so forgiving. It doesn't matter what you did. You know, there's no price to be paid for it. I just don't buy that. And I don't think it's going to be God who separates us from himself. It's going to be us. We're going to choose a life of darkness that so puts us in a place that the light of Christ cannot penetrate, or it would hurt us to be in the light, you know? And so I think there are people who, yes, have made a choice. I don't know how many there are, but there are people who will make the choice against God. I mean, plain and simple. I don't think you can deny God all your life and live contrary to what he's asking of us and think that you're just going to like waltz in front of him and be like, oh, yeah, hey, you know, I was always on your side. Really? You were? Okay. So that thought pattern of, you know, universal salvation without any price, any sacrifice, anything on our part. I get quite disgusted by it, you know, because I think it's just a typical modern invention used by people to justify doing whatever they want.
Right. But there are theologians in the church. I mean, the church is so big. There's going to be theologians that say all kinds of stuff. Balthasar.
You know, people can write things, but that doesn't mean that's what the church is saying.
No, and the church is not saying that. And the church is actually opposed to that idea. Hell is real. The church, that's a Catholic teaching. Yeah. All of that is real. People do go there. And that's, or at least there's the possibility. I don't think the church has declared that
nobody's been declared in hell yet.
No,
but, you know, but I don't think we should be surprised that there will be individuals. I mean, even Jesus tells the story of Lazarus and the rich
man,
you know, to point out that there are two experiences of post-life, you know, possible.
I just know that there's a fair amount of conversation out there, that there's a significant hope that we really can rely on, or, you know, really lean into the idea that everybody's saved. I think it's an idea to think, you know, we want to think God is just, he's not that person. He would never send anybody to hell. Like you said, it's not God sending us to hell. It's us choosing that's where we're going to go. But I think when we grasp the idea and start to really live the idea that Jesus preached all the time, you know, the road to heaven is narrow and few find it. You know, the path that leads to destruction is wide and many travel it. When we grasp that idea that whatever the end result of who's in heaven and how many, and who's in hell and how many, Jesus is saying, look, this is serious. Take it serious.
Yes.
And I think
thing we've got to be careful here, this universalist idea of God's mercy negates free will. It implies that at the end of our lives, we no longer have free will anymore, that God then suddenly takes over and makes a decision for us. And that isn't going to be the case. Free will is attached to our souls, okay? It's attached to our very essence. And we are always choosing what we're choosing. God doesn't make us choose anything. And so even at that final moment, I don't even believe the separation of the sheep and the goats, so to speak, will be God saying, okay, you're a sheep, you're a goat, you're looking at us. I think we're going to go, that's where I belong, over there, or this is where I belong, over here. You know, we're going to make that choice. That's my thought of it, because I don't know how we can look at free will and not losing it if we don't keep it all the way.
Right. No, I had not thought of that, but yeah, I agree with that entirely. You know, as I'm thinking about it now, he's not going to just expunge that free will at the moment of death and say, okay, here, I'm rubber stamping you. This is what's going to happen.
Then why bother
in the first
place?
Why
don't you just tell people from the first place that, hey, you're all going to get in.
Right.
So, you know, don't just do whatever you want to do.
Well, and that's the thing. And I think when we do fall into this, I know, you know, and this isn't just a Catholic thing. This is all over the place. I know Rob Bell was a pastor, big mega church pastor, and he wrote a book, Love Wins. And the idea is that, hey, love's going to win in the end. There's not going to be a lot of people in hell. And that was a big shock in the Protestant world because what the heck, you know, how can we say this? And yet that idea is out there. It's so, you want to believe it, you know, it feels soft and safe and happy.
And it's cushy. It's ooh, that makes me feel good.
It does. Yeah. And the thing is, we don't know who goes where and how many go where. The point of all of this is that Jesus gave us some warnings and he basically said, this is a big deal. This is something that's serious. People do run the risk of losing their souls for all of eternity, an entire eternity without God. It's just mind-boggling. And there is a reason to spread our message to people and to take that. If we really believe it, we owe it to those people.
Yeah, we owe it to people. It. Yeah, it's funny that the immediate reaction I had to when you said that, shared that that's the reason why people don't evangelize. I thought to myself, well, why the heck did I bother to become a priest then?
Right.
I mean, why go to church? Why do anything? You know, what that's the point here, you know? If love's going to win, no matter what, then really all this is just a farce.
Now, maybe his idea is that love wins because we work our way through it and we do our role. But it's a dangerous way to say it.
It's a dangerous idea because I think that too often the idea is it's all on God's shoulders and nothing's on our shoulders.
Right. He called us to evangelize, to spread the message. And it's up to us to get busy and do that. So anyway, as we talked last week, we believe that as Catholics, we've got the fullness of the faith that Jesus is truly here, body, blood, soul, and divinity. And he's asked us to share this message of his life and death and resurrection with the world, hopefully. You know, maybe some of this helped you out there. It helped me. You know, I think it helps to just wrap our brain around what we're asked to do and focus on some of the obstacles that maybe are slowing us down. See the way around them and maybe get working. You know, what is the passage? The harvest is ready and the Lord's just looking for the workers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
something like that. If you've got comments, ideas, disagreements, love to hear those too. Or you just like to talk a little more about anything we covered, please email us at comments@icatholic.show. That's comments@icatholic.show. Thanks so much for listening. For Intentionally Catholic, I'm Dan Hansen.
I'm Father Ron Hutchinson. God bless.
Thanks for listening to Intentionally Catholic. If you like what you heard, please consider sharing our show with a friend. If you have comments, questions, or topics you'd like to hear discussed, please email those to comments@icatholic.show. And be sure to tune in next time for another episode.